Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing great, trying to figure out what's going on in the basketball world. Feels like everything's flipped upside down. Happy to be here with you. A lot of energy right now. The hashtag is Big Mad, folks. My favorite bit of all of this is the trade deadline fell on a Thursday. We are here recording during Bucks Suns, so Nikias cannot enjoy Chris Middleton and Chris Paul. I am super excited about that part.
And I am not excited about that part. Would love to be watching this one live, but I will be checking that out in the morning.
Or early afternoon. Come on, Nikias. Give it to me. What happened? What is going on? Patrick Beverley woke up this morning, hit his alarm, stretched, and chose violence immediately. For no reason. Russell Westbrook didn't even play in whatever the Lakers did in Portland, which, by the way, heck of a week for Portland. You do all those trades, you lose CJ, then you beat the Lakers at home. And if you're a longtime Blazer fan, that means something to you. Anyways, Joel Embiid tops that tweet within yes, hours, which you shouldn't be able to do. Then you have an all-star draft where LeBron James is egging Kevin Durant to pick James Harden, who, oh, by the way, got traded to Philadelphia today, mm-hmm. with Charles Barkley also joining in on the fun.
Everyone had jokes today. I don't know what it is about deadline day. Everyone has some energy. Also,
shout out to the play-in, man. You got teams making moves that maybe shouldn't be making moves, but they're trying, man.
They want to get into 10.
Excited about the Kings and Pelicans in February. Kudos to you, Adam Silver.
There you go. Speaking of the Kings, how did you feel about Domantas Sabonis in his debut against the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Oh, buddy. I liked what I saw from Sacramento, and there was kind of a combination. We talked about it on the Dunker Space that we had.
Yes.
Should we do another one of those at some point? I saw what the vision was for Sacramento, at the very least. Mm-hmm. And it's a combination of things. Now, I feel like people love Halliburton, and this isn't Halliburton slander, or anyone who loves and doesn't understand why you wouldn't trade that kind of a prospect. But you get that type of talent with Sabonis that can change your team. And I think we kind of forgot, A, either how good he is, or B, that Indiana kind of didn't use him the way mm-hmm. he either should or has been used before. And I'm sure Alvin Gentry woke up non-grumpy for once. And it showed, because Sabonis was pushing in transition. He was a hub. He was a connector piece. Dribble handoffs. You saw the cutting from the Kings. When was the last time you seen the Kings cut? They were cutting on, and that was like an offense in itself. And mm-hmm. so I was very impressed with that portion. I think that the other portion of this trade, De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell. I'm not going to compare him to Halliburton, but I think the Kings thought, hey, this might bring back De'Aaron Fox, the guy we saw last year pre-All-Star break, mm-hmm. and this might unlock Davion Mitchell and open things up for him. And now we have Sabonis, and we have all these things we can do. We have talent in the room. We might have something here. Mm-hmm. I understand maybe how they landed there, because Davion looked very aggressive. De'Aaron Fox looked very aggressive. Mm-hmm. The Fox Sabonis two-man game, I want to see what it looks like against Dropmore. But there was some creativity. You could do some passing and cutting. You can do some empty corner stuff. If you want to switch, that's not a good idea. So I was encouraged by what happened there. I at least get the vision a lot more than I did maybe in the in-between zone with that trade.
I got you. Like, it was encouraging, to say the least. Like, Sabonis made his impact felt very early. Transition hit ahead, some short roll passing, some post-ups. Again, some empty corner two-man game with him and De'Aaron Fox. Empty corner two-man game with him and Davion Mitchell. And, like, one of the things we talked about in the Dunker Space was, like, having Sabonis as that kind of post-hub. Like, if there's a main – one, he's better than Halliburton right now. But if there's a main difference between the two offensively is that Sabonis just pressures the rim in a way that Halliburton does not. And so one of the plays that I highlighted midway through the first quarter, like, you get a guard setting a screen for him at the free throw line, it turns into a post-up, and first option is basically a handoff. and that guy cuts off of him so you can hit him on the cut if you need to. And if not, then it's basically just an empty, it's basically a post-up with an empty side. And the play that I clip, like Sabonis ends up missing a layup, but like it's just three power dribbles into a dude's chest and he's at the rim. It's like, oh, right. And he drew help. And it's like, oh, right. You can just kind of, if that's one of those if all else fails type things. Like the fact the third option in that set is, hey, Sabonis, bully somebody on the block and hope that they can hold you or they're going to send help. The Kings didn't have that. And so just having that kind of juice, it unlocks some things. And again, we know what Sabonis brings as a handoff guy, what he brings as a screener in general. De'Aaron Fox looked pretty darn good just sprinting off of handoffs from Sabonis. Like that's going to be something, some chemistry they got to build there. But I definitely get it as well. Defense is kind of where I'm like, what is this going to look like? Because it was Sabonis in the drop and it didn't look great to me. I think if you're going to have Sabonis at the five, like you're probably going to need to play him a little higher up. Indiana experimented with that last couple of years. Nate Yorkgren had that man blitzing like he was a Raptor. I don't know if you do it that aggressively, that consistently, but I do think he's more comfortable in that kind of scheme where he can use his underrated hands, very quick hands. That probably is a better fit for him than having him deep in a drop because the rim protection just isn't going to be there. But if they can sort that out, I think the offensive questions, I have fewer questions about it now.
Well, the funny part is I actually was more concerned about the defense going in, and I was just like, oh, okay, it's okay. Because there are a few possessions where Sabonis had the drop into a late switch, and it wasn't immediately horrific, which was like, okay, that's positive. It's still the Kings defensively, so there's a lot of just Kings possessions. But the one piece that I liked was Justin Holiday in this trade. And he had an impact because I think off the top of your head, you're thinking, okay, Sabonis, two-man game, those guys have a chemistry. His size and length in that starting lineup defensively had a little bit of juice to him. Wasn't a perfect world, but he had some juice to him. I think that helps. And I kind of liked the speed and length they had around Sabonis to kind of help him in that manner. Having Metu out there, having Barnes, you have a little bit of switchability, some guys who can at least potentially protect the paint, maybe help. So I'm interested to see how that grows, but thumbs up for me early.
Same here, same here. Now, since we are recording late on Thursday night, that means today was deadline day. We had a lot of movement. And my original plan heading into today was like, okay, cool, it's trade deadline day. Rough outline, we're going to go over the trades that happened today. We'll go through them in order, yada, yada, yada. And then James Harden gets traded for Ben Simmons and a bunch of other stuff. And like, as much as I would like to start with like the Kings, Bucks, Pistons, Clippers four-way deal or the Jazz, Spurs, Blazers deal, we'll get to those. Like, we kind of have to start with Harden and Simmons. That was the big boom. I did not expect it to get done mid-season. I thought if the Harden experiment was going to end in Brooklyn this year, like it was going to be, hey, cool, I'm going to opt in. You're going to trade me in the offseason, or I'm going to opt out. It's going to be a sign-in trade. I did not expect the pressure to ramp up to the point where, nah, we're going to get this done like noonish on deadline day.
It got interesting. So we've talked about kind of the leak battle and kind of had our jokes about it. I felt like it was a great tennis match. It was just the same stance over and over again. But when it kind of shifted to, hey, y'all know he might not want to play there anymore, and we can just kind of do this without y'all, I was like, oh. And then I think, what was it, this morning the report comes out, James Harden wants to leave but doesn't want people to yell at him. And I was like, interesting. Did you know they only played 16 games together?
Yeah.
KD, James Harden, Kyrie Irving played 16 games together, went 13-3. And it's over.
NFC. Yeah.
It's over. How do you feel about it? What's your gut reaction?
About the 13-3 or just the trade in general?
Yes.
Okay. Well, 16 games in a season and a half is insane to me. Like, you can never, you can't predict injuries and you can't predict anti-vaccination stands. But, like, 16 games is stark. It's kind of a shame that you didn't get to see more of a sample of it. And, like, I can't even, like, I guess just to lean into the bit, like, I can't even victory lap it the way I would want to as someone that had, like, Milwaukee at the top of the conference either way. But, like, you never really got to see it. And then this season happens and you really never get to see it. And KD carries as well as he can. He gets hurt. James Harden wasn't himself. Then he looked like himself. Then he wasn't himself. He gets unhappy. Kyrie comes back late. And it's just nothing about the experiment felt right. It's kind of where I come down with it. I couldn't predict the reasons that it would not be right and ultimately end early. But, like, there was always something a little off about it. So it's disappointing in that context. Where are you at on this?
For me, it's disappointing that we didn't necessarily get to see it at its height potentially go out the way maybe you think it should. Like, we don't have a definitive answer if they could have done it, because we never really got to see them in those kind of situations, which sometimes that happens. But, you know, I didn't expect when it came together for someone to be like, hey, is this like Hakeem, Scottie Pippen, and Charles Barkley? And me not having a real answer. I didn't think that would happen. I didn't think this would be compared to that one Lakers team. You can pick which one you want. But this is where we're at, and it's kind of wild. But for me, for Philadelphia, to add James Harden to what you've done this season without giving up Tyrese Maxey or Matisse Thybulle, kind of got to be a W, right?
That's pretty good stuff. Like, and I think if you were going to make the move for Harden, like, you couldn't trade for Harden, move Simmons, who obviously hadn't played, but, like, he's your best defender or best perimeter defender, and then also give up Matisse Thybulle. Because one of the concerns when you're bringing James Harden into your infrastructure defensively, like, you're going to become a switcher unit by default. Like, that's just what James Harden is going to bring to the table. Like, that you can't, that just comes with James Harden. So I don't think you could have afforded to move Harden and then also lose Thybulle, because at that point it's like, okay, what do we have left? Even if you're doing the, okay, we're going to give you Thybulle, but we're going to need Bruce Brown back. Like, that's not the same. It's just not the same. So it is a W in that regard. Daryl Morey held firm, one, that Simmons was going to net him a star, and he did, but also held firm on, hey, Tyrese Maxey has been pretty darn good in year two. Under no circumstance are we going to trade him. And sure enough, the Nets relented, and they were able to keep him. I do think they're going to miss Seth Curry. Like, that, not just the shooting, but the movement shooting that he provides. Again, him and Joel Embiid with an empty corner this year has been money. They're going to miss that. But if you can, I mean, replacing that with the creation ability of James Harden, like, that should be a W for you if he's healthy.
No, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to miss Curry and Drummond. I think they both had big contributions to this team, but that's kind of the cost of doing business. And if that was the guy you wanted and you're adding it to the bulk of what you have, that's a big piece of it. Now, I have a question for you. Because okay. I think everyone knows James Harden answers a lot of questions. You know, the big question I had was, hey, well, who's Philadelphia's non-Embiid threat come playoff time? And here's your answer. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the fit between him and Joel Embiid? Because I feel like there's some opinions out there. And my thought is both of them like the ball in their hands, right? Mm-hmm. Both of them can be at their best. Maybe when someone else can do some of these things. So we've seen Embiid be overtasked and get doubled. We've seen Harden have to carry a bigger load than maybe he anticipated this season. We've seen an unlocked Embiid this year, being able to direct traffic offensively, being able to post up, pick and pop, dribble handoff, run the show. Mm-hmm. Do you think that helps James Harden in this current state? How do you feel about the blend between those two?
I am a bit iffy on it right now. Not that it can't work, because these are two super talented players and these are two talented and smart players. But just eyeballing it, it feels weird to me. I am curious about what the pick and roll partnership is going to look like. One, Joel Embiid has never had a pick and roll partner like James Harden. Harden has never had a big like Joel Embiid. So that's going to take some time to get used to. But you think about the type of pick and roll partner you would want with Joel Embiid. You would want, I mean, one, him and Seth Curry made music together this year and last year. Like, you would want that kind of dynamic pull-up threat, quick hitting type guy. James Harden is more methodical, more of a downhill threat. You look at the pick and roll partners that James Harden has had the most success with throughout his career. It's been your Clint Capellas. You saw the chemistry that he had with Nick Claxton more so last year than this year. But like, he wants that dynamic vertical threat. And as good as Joel Embiid is, he's more of a pick and pop short roll and then turn that into an ISO type deal more so than a pure lob threat. And so I would say, again, not that I don't think it will work. I do think there are going to be some kinks to be worked out between the two. I don't know, like, these are two very distinct styles. And I would say one benefit, Joel Embiid has already shown that he can shapeshift his game a little bit because he had to a certain extent when he was playing with Ben Simmons. So I think he can space if James Harden just wants to go to work. I want to see what Harden playing off of Embiid looks like. Because we haven't seen off-ball James Harden really playing off of a guy that draws doubles since when exactly?
Kevin Durant, maybe?
I mean, yeah, but even then, that wasn't a dump it into KD and I'm going to make this cut because two's coming to you. Like, not really. Like, again, we haven't seen this kind of post threat with James Harden.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
So are we at the point where because Embiid hasn't been rolling, he can't roll? Is that how we're viewing it?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. Me and you have had the Embiid as a roller conversation before on the pod. And so I've never been super high on him as a roller. So I do just want to see what it looks like. That's a question mark for me right now.
I think there's a slow roll aspect to him that has gotten forgotten. I don't think he's the dynamic slip guy, but he's definitely someone who could roll in the pocket with James in theory. Mm-hmm. So I think there's more to that than is being credited. I know the statistics. He hasn't rolled a lot and he does like to pop. So I do get that. You did make a good point about the pick and roll partners and how that fits, because we've also seen Harden with, not the same degree, but with LaMarcus Aldridge, mm-hmm. and what that looked like. And did that become an automatic of sorts? So how they mesh together is going to be key. Now, I have a, my mind went to how do you guard those two in pick and roll? Mm-hmm. And we could talk about it a little bit. For one, switching is off the table.
Yeah, can't do that.
That's out of there. So what? No matter how you feel about James Harden right now, we've seen what he does against switches. And even if you don't believe in that portion, Joel Embiid's going to punish whoever you switch. So you got to take that out of the table. Drop probably seems like a plus, but you know Harden can get downhill. He's not coming off with a ton of speed, so he can hold your defense. And Embiid can pop. So... Mm-hmm. Now you got a big closing out. You got Harden holding your defense, being able to skip. That could get interesting. And then do you really want to put two on the ball at the level? Because even if Embiid can't roll, he could short roll. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be an easy pop. Now he's got an advantage, and what do you do there? So while there's going to be a tough, I don't want to say tough, but while there's going to be an adjustment period, there's some pressure that's going to be on some defenses as far as, how do we navigate this properly?
No, I'm with you. I think to answer your question, drop probably makes the most sense, especially since Harden just hasn't really had the jumper this year in particular.
But guess who has?
Joel Embiid.
That's the question. So you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I'm just saying that throws a dynamic. So if you say, hey, we're going to let James do whatever he wants in space, mm-hmm. you still have to deal with the guy popping. Yep. And not only is he making shots, he's driving as well. So that's where I'm like, I get what y'all are saying, but also there's some stuff here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got you. How do you feel about this deal in relation to Tobias Harris? Last time we talked about him, we both noted like he has been playing better as of late.
Offensively or defensively?
Offensively. We'll get into the defense because I have some questions. But
oh boy. All right. Let me buckle up. Tobias offensively, it's going to be interesting. This could open up matchups for him potentially. If you think about it, in theory, you got to put perimeter defender X on Harden. Mm-hmm. So now who guards Tobias? Does that open some things up for him? Can we get him going more in post-ups? Does he get it out of the flow? Does he attack kickouts? Can he stay aggressive is going to be curious because Harden's going to have the ball in his hands. You know, Embiid's going to have the ball. How much is he going to really be playing off of things? It interests me. But does this open up him with the second unit more? Does this allow you to try and kind of use him to stagger? I have a staggering question, but we'll talk about that after. So I think there's elements where you can try to unlock Tobias and maybe use him as a weapon. You know, maybe he's a screener for James Harden as well. You never know.
I feel like at this stage, I do think Harden-Harris pick and rolls will probably be switched. Like, I think you just kind of take your chances with that. Okay, like I get that. I think the big thing with adding Harden, like it just kind of shifts everyone into their role. Like I think Embiid's still gonna be your guy, but he's your primary ball. Harden's your primary ball handler. Tobias Harris is very firmly your number three, which works much better for him. So I think Tobias has to be happy right now. Let's talk about the defense. If we're assuming the starting lineup is going to be, well, actually, let's zoom out there. What is the starting lineup going to be for Philly?
I mean, I would imagine you go Maxi, Harden, Tybalt, Tobias, and Embiid.
Okay. Because my first thought.
Who would you put in? Danny Green?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, do you start Danny?
Over Maxi?
Yeah, like, I mean, Maxi plays more minutes. But I'm saying, do you start those two? Or do you roll with Maxi? I mean, Maxi's obviously been better and is better than Danny Green this year. Like, I don't want to, quote unquote, punish him and make him your sixth man. But, like, Maxi isn't great defensively. We know what Harden is. Harris isn't great defensively. Like, there could be some balance there if you go Harden, Green, Tybalt, Harris, Embiid.
It makes sense. I just don't know if they keep Maxi and then throw him to the bench, I guess would be my theory. If he's having this year, you probably reward him.
Yeah.
Although you probably have more versatility on both ends with the other lineup, but I imagine Maxi stays in the starting lineup. So how poorly do you feel about this defensive unit right now?
I don't love it. I think Maxi is still trying to find himself at the point of attack right now. Tybalt is fantastic, of course. Harden is the exact opposite of fantastic. Don't love Harris. And then there's Embiid, who they've, again, like he's been a phenomenal drop defender throughout most of his Philly tenure. And they have been playing him closer to the level this year, which is intriguing. I kind of worry about the strain that's going to be on Embiid now. with Harden in the mix. And again, once Harden is in your mix, like, you kind of switch more by default. So I just wonder if that's going to lead to more, all right, we need Embiid to send, provide more help now. We have to rotate a little bit more now. If we have a bad switch somewhere, we have to really tighten up the communication on scram switching now. If we're just switching everything 1 through 4, I just want to see what it looks like.
I like doing this podcast because it makes me think and I get to throw other things out there. Let's have some more fun in that direction. One, I think a lot of it depends on how good Tobias Harris plays defensively, to be honest. Last year in the playoffs, everything kind of flipped when they couldn't find a coverage for Tobias Harris against Trae Young. And now you also add James Harden to that, and that brings up some question marks. Now, in theory, you have Matisse who can guard whoever that guy is. You have Tobias who should be able to guard one of the others. His defense and Maxey's defense are going to be key to allow Harden to have a matchup where you don't have to worry about as much. And that's where my mind goes to. Can they pull that off? Because now you can put him in a position where he's guarding X or able to do some sort of help defense type deal. And Embiid doesn't have to worry as much. So, I hear the concerns about the switching. I hear the concerns about the defense. But I'm wondering, can they scheme their way out of it? Can they match up their way out of it?
Yeah. Like, it's going to be, obviously going to be personnel depending on the other side. I guess just zooming out, like, Harden and Harris are both fours defensively to me. Which, one of those guys is going to have to defend a wing. And this is already on top of, all right, we're going to need some good stuff from Tyrese Maxey now. Not just good flashes. And, you know, looking at this within a playoff lens, that could be a little bit problematic. Because, again, that's ultimately going to fall on Embiid to clean up a lot of messes if they can't shore that up.
No, I hear you. But I'm thinking they play the Bucks. You could put Harden on Grayson Allen, right?
Yeah, I guess you could. Because, like, even if you're looking at Grayson screening for Giannis, and they do that, they would just switch that, and James Harden wants to defend post-ups anyway.
So that's where I'm kind of like, hey, maybe there's some outs there. Don't get me wrong. This ain't me saying, hey, it's going to be a perfect world.
No, got you.
Just proposing another idea, because they play Miami, got P.J. Tucker. They play Chicago. He'd probably try and guard DeMar, actually.
There was that one clip earlier this year. DeMar got to step back and James just looking at him like,
huh? Hey, he called for the matchup. So I guess that part's interesting. I want to see how Philadelphia tries to scheme around that, because there are some question marks defensively. But, man.
That's a talent infusion, though.
It's... if they get it right, you know? Like, I feel like the blend offensively is going to be key. And how do you feel about staggering them?
The Doc Rivers question.
Oh, wait a minute. How is Doc Rivers catching a stray? I didn't mean, like, all bench lineups. I just meant, like, staggering them. You know what? Go ahead.
You know, the thing about staggering is that the coach has to want to do.
We've seen him play Tobias. You know what? I'm not doing this with you. Top 15 coach of all time. Leave that man alone.
Oh, man.
He's got the 10th most wins in NBA history. Let that man live.
Yeah. He has won games. Can't confirm.
What did Glenn do to you?
He did. Oh, goodness. Nothing. Shout out to Doc Rivers for making the all-time 15 list. Good. Hashtag good for him. But as far as the staggering goes, this is also why I want to know like how they're starting. Because I think if you do go, oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, do you think the staggering depends on which version of James Harden you get?
Yeah, it is. Because the version we've seen for most of the year isn't able to carry bad bench units like he was in Houston. And that's going to be a problem. So if Harden's better, then that's he's going to make it a lot easier to be like, all right, cool. We're going to keep Tobias and Joel tied at the hip. And now you and Tyrese Maxey can have fun terrorizing second units. So that we'll just have to see what Harden looks like there. Yeah, that's going to be key. Because they also still need to add some pieces. Because they have a couple of roster spots available to kind of go hunting in the buyout market. I don't think they're done.
Did we cover the Philly portion? Did we miss anything on the Philly portion? Paul Millsap, when them knees thaw out, it's going to be a good move.
Is Millsap already going to keep Millsap? Like, I don't know. I haven't seen a report or anything. Like, that's a genuine open question.
I'm assuming they would.
Because if they do, like, well, there's the playing time that he was looking for. Because with Andre Drummond out of there, man, Millsap has to play well. Otherwise, we're basically a year 15 of the Sixers blitz teams when Joel Embiid's on the court, and then his backup comes in and they bleed points. So hopefully Paul Millsap is up for the job as a backup five, because otherwise they're going to need to make a move. Like, that's been one of the underrated joys of this Sixer team up until the trade. Like, Joel goes to the bench. Here comes Andre Drummond that is running high post up through him, and he's playing in multiple coverages defensively. Like, Andre Drummond's been good this year.
Wow. Folks, we've done it. We've done it. 79 episodes of the Dunker Spot. We've come full circle for you longtime dunkers. Just note, in this season of basketball, we've gotten Blake Griffin praise, LaMarcus Aldridge praise, and Andre Drummond praise with slight Boogie Cousins praise, which is a vast difference from last year.
This is incredible.
We saw you.
Oh, here we go.
There's film of what you did.
Okay. Were you proud of that one?
I've been practicing. I was waiting on that one. You know, like the payoff for the off-season Instagram videos is actually trying to move in the game. So,
okay. You know. Yeah. All right. You tied it all in. You tied it all in. Let's go to the Brooklyn side of this. Ben Simmons is a net. Instantly becomes their best defender. Instantly becomes their best passer. He might be their best rebounder. Oh, well, aside from Andre Drummond, because Andre Drummond is a net. Let's start there. Is Andre Drummond starting at the five for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. Drummond, Blake, Aldridge on the same roster is funny, but I probably still lean LaMarcus if he's healthy. But I could see a world where you start Drummond. The question is, if everyone's healthy, where does Nick Claxton fit? And I don't mean that in like a bit wise, but I do just mean like, is he going to be a matchup based? Because Drummond gives you the size of the rim protection and Aldridge gives you the offensive threat. I don't know.
I think it would be a matchup dependent thing, because among the big room, like, he's still the switch option. Drummond's better in drop, and again, he's been pretty darn good at the level because he's been one of the best steal guys among the center positions basically his entire career. So he can do that. Claxton is still your switch guy. He's still your vertical spacing / lob threat between the three. So you can find pockets for him. But I do think he's very clearly three at best in the big man room, behind Aldridge and Drummond. And depending on which version of Blake you get, I mean, Steve Nash has shown that he would trust Blake if he's got it going, for better or for worse. So, I don't know. I mean, that's also why the trade gets done and you immediately hear a report like, hey, Brooklyn is shopping the first that we just got and Nick Claxton to see if we can make an upgrade somewhere. And I would imagine that upgrade would have come in the wing room because they are going to need a little bit more help, I would think. Because it's Ben Simmons and then Bruce Brown defensively. And he's good. Like, I don't want to poo-poo on that. But, like, also, he's 6'2", 6'3".
Ain't no love for Kessler Edwards?
Like, Kessler just feels overtasked to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot for him to have to be that night in, night out.
Yeah.
Have you been able to really process this trade as far as what Simmons could be for the Nets? Because I'm having a hard time because, A, I'm still trying to figure out what the Nets are. B, they're two different teams, home and away. So one version of Simmons, and there's another version of Simmons that you have to use. So you're having to integrate your team plus Simmons plus Kyrie when he plays. There's no Joe Harris. So it's like, where are you at? What do you see with Simmons and the Nets?
Like, he, in theory, at the very least, he makes a lot of things make sense for them. Again, like, I am very excited for what he can do for their transition attack. Because I think Brooklyn was missing that a ton when Kyrie was out. Just out. They didn't have a guy that could just get them into early offense. James Harden wants to walk it up. Or wanted to walk it up. Kevin Durant isn't a pure push guy. Ben Simmons can force a turnover or grab a defensive rebound and just kick off a possession by himself. And this is going to be the floor has been spread for him, depending on what the starting lineup is going to be. So I think he juices the transition attack in a way that they desperately need. Defensively, he gives them a big wing defender. He gives them an elite defender, period, but specifically gives them an elite wing defender that they just haven't had. And I think that's going to make things a lot simpler for them as a switchy unit. My thing with Ben Simmons, big question mark for me, is like, what is he going to look like as a screener / dirty work guy? Is he going to be willing to really commit to that? Because he's only really done that in spurts in Philly. If he does commit to that kind of thing, like, Kyrie Simmons pick and rolls are going to be unguardable. If he does commit to that.
I sure hope he does. Because there's a lot of value, especially, and this is projecting, but especially if they're able to get Kyrie, Seth Curry, Joe Harris, KD, Ben Simmons out there. Mm-hmm. And you've got Simmons rolling wild with space. Mm-hmm. You're cooking with something. You get Kyrie and Simmons, shoot, even with an empty corner, that's going to be tough. So I think there's elements where he can, and you just wonder, is there going to be enough pace and tempo and opportunities for him to push to also buy into that? But I think philosophically, he's okay with movement. He's okay with drive and kick. So this should be a place where he could have more buy-in. And if he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder now, he may never. So
yeah,
I can imagine that he might be able to buy in a little bit easier, especially when you have a player like KD should be able to get some buy-in there.
That's the hope at the very least. What do you foresee the KD Simmons partnership looks like offensively?
See, that's the part where I'm trying to wrap my head around it, because you're likely going to have your, it depends. I can't see that it wouldn't be a switch, right? So even if it's not your best defender on Simmons, it's someone with size. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of maybe becomes a switch. You're not going to drop against KD. So what does it really open up? how do you use those two together outside of maybe Draymond Curry-ish type ways where you're helping off of Simmons, we hit Simmons, now KD cuts off him type of deal where you can punish the help that way. But that's one of the things I'd probably have to see to be able to see the vision more. Other than Ben Simmons drawing kick, potentially, you know, post-ups if he draws help, kick out. But I don't know how much screening actually you can get with those two together that doesn't help the defense or at least put them in a position where, okay, we're fine, unless they're trapping.
Yeah, I got you. Like, this is where, this is the question I have about Simmons in relation to this group. Like, I wonder, because you mentioned Kyrie, Seth, Harris, if he's healthy, KD, Simmons. I kind of worry, or the question I have is, like, does Simmons' presence, if he isn't going to be a shoot, if he's going to be able to shoot, does that allow you to keep a big on the floor? And if it does that just give you built-in advantages on the glass?
For the other team?
Yeah.
Well,
because Brooklyn hasn't been a good rebounding team this year.
True. You probably give that up, but that would, I mean, you're not going to want to play drop with that lineup out there. So I think that helps Simmons as a screener.
If he screens. Like, I'm not even trying to be slanderous. Like I'm generally just throwing. Like, I feel like when it comes to these put player on new team in terms of signing or trade, I think that's kind of where this is where we differ. If I see something, if I make a move, it's like, okay, wait, how can this be exploited? How could this not work? And I think naturally you're like, okay, how could this work? And I think that leads to some interesting places for us when we talk about these kind of things.
Well, yeah, because you'd be hating.
Okay. That's how we... You know what? Fair enough. Okay.
Oh, Kyrie is a screener for Ben Simmons. Or insert small shooting guard as a screener for Ben Simmons. Because we've seen Simmons have success with those kind of guards. Mm-hmm. That's something they could go to.
Mm-hmm.
So throwing that out there. I'm interested to hear from you on this portion, though. How do you feel about the size in the Nets' backcourt?
Not great. If it's... Because you're looking at Kyrie and Seth.
And then if you're not, you're looking at Seth and Patty.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of bucket getters who are of similar height.
Yeah.
They may have defeated Denver in cornering that market.
And they got the guards that can shoot, so... Yeah, that could be an issue. I kind of wish... I kind of wish Brooklyn had a little bit more... One, I wish they just had more size, period. But I wish they had a little bit more rim protection. Like, this is going to be a lot of strain on KD when he comes back, which he's had it all year. Like, he's kind of been their saving grace defensively this season. And you felt his absence. This is something that we talked about in the pod before. But you felt his absence when he was out because they just didn't have real backline help if you were getting, like, Claxton on the perimeter and stuff like that. So KD's going to have to be up for the job whenever he's back healthy, and he's coming off of a knee injury. So we're going to see what that looks like. I don't know. I love the fit in general. Cause again, I think Ben Simmons fills a lot of holes that Brooklyn had. Like, they didn't have a wing defender like this. They didn't have a passer like this. They didn't have a defensive rebounder like this. But I also kind of feel like he gives the defense some answers in a way because of his profile. And so I'm just like, okay, how much is he going to unlock these other two guys versus how much easier is he going to make it for teams to scheme against those two guys and scores, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. And it's been an issue Brooklyn's faced all year long as far as finding the right lineups to function on both ends of the floor. So that's going to make things pretty interesting. But at the end of the day, you get talent for Harden. You add some pieces, so you at least have some version of depth. Because at this point, with how, I guess, hobbled they've been, I felt like, okay, they're just trying to get some players in this. Like, they're entertaining this to, hey, can we get some more bodies in this room? So I think that's going to be interesting. But again, they got to find the right combinations, and it's going to be a journey for them. So I think they probably take a hit in the short term because you lose the scoring and playmaking of Harden that you know you have. But it could also open things up to where you stylistically get closer to where you want to be offensively. So it's kind of a back and forth. But who knows when he's going to play? Who knows what's going to happen with Kyrie? There's just so many question marks that I have.
Yeah, like, it's going to take a while for them to even establish the chemistry. KD's out. Kyrie can only play half the games. Ben Simmons, one, got to make sure he's okay. And then two, he hasn't played a game this year. And, like, you know, working out and playing pickup is not playing NBA basketball. So it's going to be like three separate ramp-up periods in the second half of the season for Brooklyn. And that's a lot to try to navigate in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But I think you could say both teams got better. Is that too strong? Or
I think they both answered some questions. Philly needed someone. I don't want to say trustworthy, because that seems like shade to Maxie, but like, Harden is a bona fide half-court option that strikes fear. And I don't think Philly had that guy outside of Joel Embiid.
No, I think that's fair. As good as Maxey's been, he's not at game plan level right now.
Right.
You know, he's at, wow, he's hurting us, but he's not at, we're going to change our base coverage yet. Mm. And Harden, even with what he is right now in the eyes of some people, still not a guy you're going to dare to beat you. So I think it's good. Who won the trade? I'm going to ask you, since you're the most accomplished writer.
Okay. On the podcast? What? Sure.
Wow, you hating on my skills? All right. Sign me up. How you do this?
Oh, see? You have my job in like 3 days. I know where this goes. Oh, goodness. My initial reaction, I think Brooklyn won the trade early on. There are just so many moving parts for both sides, though. But I think Brooklyn wins the trade. One, like, again, they just really needed the playmaking and the defense help. And I think Ben Simmons is going to provide that. Also, like, you now have a locked in 25-year-old for 4 more years. And if Harden was going to walk anyway, like, you, it's hard to do better than Ben Simmons. And also Seth, and also Andre Drummond, and also a couple of picks.
Yeah, they replenished some draft capital, so there's that. So I wanted to get your opinion on that. We went deep on that trade.
We did, in fact, go deep on that trade.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. Do you want to touch on KZ Akpala now?
KZ Akpala to the OKC Thunder for
bag of chips.
Okay. It's a 2026 second round pick. That is a human being. Let's be respectful. Let's be respectful. Also got a first round pick amendment instead of a 2023 pick going to OKC. I think that got pushed back to 2025. A protected pick that will be unprotected in 2026 if it doesn't convey. That allowed Miami to trade their 2022 or 2023 first round pick. They did neither as the deadline went past. So we'll see if they have something cooking in the offseason. But shout out to KZ Akpala. I will never forget the Sacramento game. I won't forget the minutes at the five. You provided plenty of content for us on this podcast. There will always be a microphone waiting for you if you want to hop on. So you can call Steve a hater.
I'm not a hater. I think it'll be fun. I'd like to see him grow in OKC. He's got some talent and potential. Fresh start.
Uh-huh.
The bit has to live. It was worth it.
Was it? All right. What other trades stood out to you? Let's just bounce around on these.
Let's roll through them.
All right. Let's just stay on Brandon. Let's go roll with all the bits. So the Blazers acquired Nikhil Alexander-Walker in the CJ McCollum deal, right?
And I thought that was a great move. Young flyer, all about it. Two thumbs up.
And then they traded him to Utah. So the deal, Utah ends up getting Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Juancho Hernangómez. The Spurs got Tomas Satoransky in the 2027 second round pick. The Blazers got Joe Ingles, obviously out for the year, not going to play. Elijah Hughes and a 2022 second round pick via Memphis, which, you know, the Grizzlies, if you haven't heard, are pretty good this year. So that seems to be a late second round pick. And now I'm just kind of confused. Because the Blazers also didn't do anything beyond that.
It's all about flexibility.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off and we're going to have options. What we do with them, we don't know yet. But we're going to have the options to do things.
Man. I get it. Money moves are boring to the fan base.
They sure are. And that low-key was what the Utah. That was a lot. But.
Yeah.
Instead of talking about that, let's talk about Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Jordan Clarkson bench unit.
So Utah just isn't a contender anymore, huh?
This wasn't the wing you were looking for.
Hey, we need some help in the wing / forward room. We need to give Royce O'Neal some relief. Joe Ingles showed some slippage, and he's also out for the year. Let's acquire Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who solves none of those problems. He's worse Clarkson right now.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Wasn't expecting that. For you, it felt like we had to do something move. We Ingles is out. We need to add something.
Yeah.
Let's get Nah and let's just add some bench scoring.
At least flip Nah for Cam Reddish and pretend to have a wing that can defend.
The Cam Reddish trade rumors were weird because New York just got him and there's one person who doesn't like him and he didn't acquire him. So I don't understand why everyone was like, oh, they're going to move him. They just got him.
Yeah, it was also weird that they got him. That's the whole thing. Cam's like, you know what? I want out of Atlanta. I want to spread my wings. I want some more touches. I feel like there's more for me to do. Let's get traded to the New York Knicks with like 7 guards / wings on the depth chart. And the Knicks are like, cool, we're going to trade some vets. What vet did they trade? Not a single one.
This is where front office and coach synergy is important.
Yes.
And if you don't have it, you have to clear the roster so that the synergy will exist. And especially if it's proven circumstances on what will happen. So that part's been kind of weird. But, I mean, so it gets a big Nah from you.
It's a big Nah from me.
Okay. All right.
It's just strange for everyone involved.
Okay.
Shout out to the second round picks that were included in the deal. I guess we'll see what those are this offseason. But yeah. Let's talk about this four teamer that was teased at the beginning of this podcast.
Let the people know what happened because I lost track of who went where, but let's get it.
It's a lot. But at last check, the Kings got Dante DiVincenzo from the Bucks. They got Trey Lyles and Josh Jackson from the Pistons. The Bucks got Serge Ibaka from the Clippers and also 2 second round picks. The Pistons got Marvin Bagley III. And the Clippers got Rodney Hood and Semi Ojeleye from the Bucks and saved a whole lot of tax dollars in the process. We were talking a little bit pre-show about Ibaka. What are your concerns about the Ibaka acquisition for Milwaukee?
I'm in a weird place with this deal. I'm not going to lie to you. My initial concern was, hey, I really liked you guys' lineup versatility, and you kind of traded some of that away. And Bucks Twitter threw me and Dante DiVincenzo over the top rope, which is understandable. So I don't think the deal is bad. Milwaukee needs a big. We know that. Mm-hmm. What they traded probably, and Simi and Rodney Hood aren't huge pieces. And I can understand how the Bucks could look at what Grayson Allen has done, what Pat does, what Wes Matthews has done, and what George Hill can do, and say, you know what? Let's fix this big man room real quick. We can live with those options. We still have Jordan Nwora as well. Mm-hmm. So we have options to make that small lineup work. Let's get Serge. Now the question is, what Serge are we getting?
Yes.
So I can't dislike this trade because I was okay and I like the Boogie Cousins fit. So I can't say Serge is going to be terrible for the Bucks. But there's kind of an expectation if you go and grab him. So in theory, I understand what he brings to the table. Big, multiple schemes defensively. He can roll. He can space. He can guard multiple positions. He can shore up some things for you to give you some options in that big man room. So it's not just Bobby Portis and Giannis at the five. But he also is coming from the Clippers, who kind of looked at Hartenstein and was like,
he's better.
We got two bigs. So can Serge hit the notes he needs to hit? And like, I understand contender, fresh opportunity, could be a breath of fresh air for him. New life, could breathe it. He hasn't been healthy. So that's contributed some of it. So maybe there isn't as much pressure on him because, again, they can always just go to Giannis at the five and be like, all right, we don't necessarily need you. But for this to pop in the way I think it should, they're going to need some of that production. Or he could just be another weapon in the back pocket. I'm kind of in between. But I get it from Milwaukee's perspective.
Like, I think once the deal went down, people were like, whoa, does Milwaukee feel this bad about Brook Lopez? Is there... did something go wrong with the recovery? Yada, yada. I'm just like, no, I don't think so. It's just Brooke is out, and the only drop big on the roster is Greg Monroe on a 10-day. And so if you can add another guy to help you through this portion of the season, then do that. And like, to echo everything you just said, we got a bunch of guards. We got a bunch of wings if we want to go small. Like, we just extended Grayson Allen and stuff. Like, okay, cool. Let's shave a little money. Let's get Serge. Like, he expires after the season. We have a drop big. Now, Bobby Portis has been playing high all year long. He got a drop big. He's going to help us out. Serge, as unsurge like as he's looked overall this year, he is shooting well from three this year. So, like, the jumper's back a little bit. Like, all right, cool. We got a pick and pop big. We got a guy that can switch some. Can hang in a drop, not going to be elite at it, but he can at least serve his job and gives us that scheme versatility until Brook comes back. And then once Brook comes back, now you just have this three-headed monster in the center room. Like, all right, we're starting Brook. He's going to drop for us. He's going to space the floor for us. Bobby Portis can shoot all over the place. We can play him high. Serge, in theory, is like the blend between the two. We can drop him some. We can switch him some depending on what the matchup is. I don't know how often I want to play him high, but like, he can do that in a pinch. And he can also shoot. And so you kind of save the Giannis at 5 minutes for when you really need him. And so like, I get the bet for them. I am a little bit more curious on the Kings side of this deal. Where they're getting Dante, they're getting Trey Lyles, they're getting Josh Jackson. I want to know how all those guys fit in the rotation. And I want to see.
Oh, go ahead. No. I was going to say, so do you like the addition of talent, or are you just afraid it's crowded?
A little bit of both. Like, Dante, when healthy, he's always been like a good off-ball mover. So I'm curious to see his partnership with Sabonis whenever they do get to play together. Josh Jackson is a ball of energy getting downhill, he should be fun in transition, or he should be fun flying off of handoffs from Sabonis or flying off of those cuts. Trey Lyles, been pretty solid. Gives him some front court depth. Actually, while we're on the Kings, kind of weird they didn't trade Rashawn Holmes.
Kind of, but if you're going to start Sabonis at the five, you can always trade Holmes later, and that's a really good bench, like big to come off the bench.
Yeah.
Like when I was watching the Wolves game, I was like, oh, yeah, right. I don't have to make the Sabonis Turner jokes. You can just do that. Like you could do the Sabonis stuff and then come with Rashawn Holmes pick and roll with the second unit. And I'm like, ah, I see what's going on. I like getting Dante DiVincenzo for them. And this could be selfish because I want to see him and Davion Mitchell play defense together off the bench. But now you have potentially a bench lineup of Davion, Dante, Jeremy Lamb, Trey Lyles, Rashawn Holmes. Could do worse. I'm intrigued. For me, it's Kings doing solid things that make sense, but also being the Kings. So it's like, y'all just don't have the benefit of the doubt.
Everyone's in wait and see mode. How you feel about Bagley in Detroit?
I like the idea. I'm curious how it works. So like Detroit, obviously, hey, let's get talent. Let's get young talent. Where does he
roll, man?
Yeah, where does he play though? Like, do they start him at the five? Do you go with him at the five? And let him play with Jeremy Grant and Sadiq Bey and Cade Cunningham and insert guard. Do you try and play him at the four with Grant and Sadiq and Cade? I don't know if I like him as much at the four. You don't get him to not have him unlocked, but that's kind of a crowded room in the sense. If you have Jeremy Grant, you have Kelly Olynyk, you have Bagley, you have Stewart. Did I miss anybody?
I mean, Lyles is in the trade, so Luka Garza, if you want to throw him in there.
Yeah, I want to see where they put him at.
My initial read is like, okay, we're just going to join him at the hip with Kelly Olynyk, and okay, the defense is just going to be what it is, but like you have a spacer five in Olynyk, and Bagley can just dive to the rim all the time. And like if there's one thing that he can do at a high level, it's rim run. So there's a fit there. And again, like Cade just desperately, they needed to get Cade a vertical threat. He just didn't have it. Like the best version of it was Isaiah Stewart. And that's, you know, he's having the year that he's having right now.
Would have been way better served with last year's Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be some intriguing stuff. But like I feel like Marvin Bagley, Detroit's been rumored literally all season long. So it was cool that it finally happened. This is a solid flyer for them. They're not losing a piece of consequence in this deal. Like Lyles wasn't going to be there long term. Josh Jackson was a flyer in and of himself. And with like with what Hamidou Diallo's been doing over the last month and a half, like Jackson was very much expendable. So I get it. Like, I don't know if they can pencil in 28 minutes for Bagley a night, and I don't think you need to. Let him feel his role. See if the jumper is a real thing for him. And if it is, then you expand it out and see, okay, what is his best position defensively? Like, it probably is the four at this point, which isn't great because he has his off-ball lapses. He has some kinks to work out in space. But you at least try to make that manageable with all the other length that you have on the floor. Again, if you're playing Jeremy Grant, Cade, and Sadiq Bey at the same time, like you can shrink the floor in a way with that kind of size and length out there. And maybe you can mitigate how much space Marvin Bagley has to cover defensively. So I kind of like it. I kind of like it.
No, I like it as well. Uh-huh. And I've liked Bagley making some steps defensively. You know, he's had some flashes as a four, as a switch guy. So it'll be interesting to see if they go that route and he continues to grow. If anything else, it's an opportunity to really see him in a different spot, and hopefully he's able to get a move. How do you feel about the Clippers just cornering the market on multiple position wing guys?
They're West Coast / American Toronto, I guess. Let's just get a whole bunch of 6'5 to 6'9 dudes and roll them out there. Like, one, are we counting Shimmy in this? Like, I don't.
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
No gelée.
There we go. Rodney Hood's always going to intrigue, but like, I don't know what. Can you pencil him in for minutes?
I wouldn't be surprised by a Rodney Hood, like, big third quarter in a small lineup. It's the Clippers. It makes sense.
Ty Lue will get it out of them.
They have to, how do they have this many options for small lineups?
It's funny because if you look at Utah, it's like you literally just can't do it. And here the Clippers are like, well, this is all we can do. Also, here's Zubac. It's just like, oh, okay. Well, that's, if you're not going to have Kawhi and PG are out and they still have like 8 wings to play.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Yeah,
they have mad lineup versatility with small units. Like, that's insane to me. Like, we could just do Amir Coffee. Terrence Mann's still here. We added Covington. Norman Powell's here as well. Luke Kennard, he's not defending. Okay, that's fine. We'll keep Morris in there. Oh, Batum. And we still have two big. We still have two bigs. So even if we don't want to go all the way small, that Clippers are going to be a nightmare for somebody. I keep saying it, but they're not going to be a fun playoff matchup.
They're not
at all. Now, of course, they got to get out of the play-in to make that work.
Yeah, because they are. Where are they at right now? They are 8.
They are 8, 3 games behind Minnesota. That play-in race is going to be fun.
Yeah. Sacramento is 2 games back with New Orleans, by the way.
It's crazy. They both made these moves to push for this, and only one of them is probably going to make it, unless Redacted just completely falls apart.
I mean, I'll say the percentages are going up on that at this point. Wouldn't make the bet right now, but it ain't looking great. I don't know. Let's go with a quick one. The Spurs getting Goran Dragic, and then they're going to buy him out, so he's not even there. But they get a protected first round pick. And Thad Young is a Raptor now.
How do you feel about it? Because I got booed by a whole country.
What? Did you slander Thad Young?
Didn't slander Thad Young. That wasn't the place I wanted him to go. Like, I get it, but that wasn't the place where I thought he would pop. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts before I counter.
I think, one, the Raptors are rolling with like a 6.5 man rotation. They needed a body, period. So just off rip, Thad Young being a playable veteran makes this a win for them, because Goran Dragic wasn't playing for them. But beyond that, if we are to believe that the Raptors are just going to be a playoff team, which at this point, like, yeah, they probably just are a playoff team, then they're going to need some trustworthy players in the front court. Kim Birch is limited. Precious Achiuwa has been very good defensively. I have no idea what's going to happen when he gets the ball on offense. You never know which version of Chris Boucher you're going to get. Sometimes he's blocking three-pointers and knocking them down the other end and finishing off of offensive rebounds. And other times he's just getting completely lost and the jumper is evolving. Thad Young gives them solid. At the 5, are going to be in the right spots. At the 4, with Toronto playing defense as aggressively as they do, I'm going to be the backline guy, rotate over, cut off some drives for you. Offensively, I'm going to screen. I'm going to float around the dunker spot. I'm going to float in the middle of the floor. I'm going to get to my floater. If I'm playing with Fred VanVleet and he has it going, you send 2 to the ball on him, I could be a short roll playmaker for you. We saw what Thad Young was doing in Chicago last year. Like, he can just make things make sense in a way that nobody else in that front court can.
I hear you. So I'll take an L at some point in this conversation, because my concern it didn't have anything to do with Thad. Mm-hmm. For me, my first thought was there's some switchability here. And their lineups have a lot of the same player, which is good because you can keep the same pressure on teams and you have a versatility that can help on both ends. It just feels crowded a little bit. Mm-hmm. But when you speak, it brings up the point that if you throw Thad in there, theoretically at the five, he's probably their best short role playmaker. Mm-hmm. That's no disrespect to Pascal Siakam, but Thad screening for Fred VanVleet could open some things up in a way that maybe I hadn't necessarily thought about. I guess my biggest issue is how much does he play and who does he play with? So, like, is he playing with the bench guy? Well, I guess I shouldn't say bench guy since they play
exactly
mainly starters. But how many of those guys is he playing ahead of? And what's their best lineup now? So if you had to lock in their best lineup, you definitely put in Fred, Siakam, and OG, right? Mm-hmm. Do you put Scottie Barnes in their best lineup?
Yeah. Like, I think at best, like, if Thad just has it going on a night, then you can close with him as the fifth guy. But I think in general, like, he's just a bridge that helps them get to their best lineup, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I guess for me, it was like, I'll have to see how they use him and who they use him with. Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm with Freddie, you.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I'm with you that there are other spots in which Thad could be better utilized. But I do think there's utility for him in Toronto.
No, man, I guess maybe I let my disappointment in that portion cloud what could happen for Toronto. Because him and Freddie is going to be tough to deal with. Mm-hmm. Now, the only issue is how's the spacing and who's spaced where? To where the defense can't necessarily help. Mm-hmm. But then again, you can always kick and drive. And so it's a good move for Toronto. And they weren't playing Goran anyway. So again, as you stated, at least they got a player. So I'll take my L on that one. I'm sorry, Canada.
You have to call it an L. Like, I definitely get the concerns, but like, that's where I was just like, okay. That's solid, and they needed some sort of stability because you just don't know what you're getting from the rest of the fives on that roster on any given night.
I'm asking a quick question before you go to the next one.
Okay.
Who do you know more players who play for a team, the Blazers or the Spurs?
Probably the Spurs. Off the top of my head, I would say the Spurs.
That's probably, that's a safe bet. It's close though.
Yeah, and that reminds me, because like this is a thing that I just do, like just chilling around the house. Like, all right, Dakai, see if you can name 12 players from each roster in the league. So I need to run that exercise back probably like early next week, since, you know, trade deadline and stuff. Got the roster's out of whack. So I need to see where everybody's at, but I need to do that soon, just to jog the memory. While we're on the Spurs. Derek White to the Celtics, Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, and a 2022 first round pick that's protected 1-4, and also a 2028 pick swap. What was your initial reaction?
I like the move for Boston. I think that Derek White can check a lot of boxes off for them. I think he's probably a more consistent fit with their, or next to their big two, mm-hmm. if you want to say. And he's someone who can play multiple positions, guard multiple positions. So if you stick with that same starting lineup, he can help that second unit. You can operate a little bit more. You can play him with starters if you want to go smallish. And honestly, anytime you could see Marcus Smart and Derek White play defense, that seems like a good idea. Seems like fun. I would probably be all in on this one if his shot was a little bit better right now. Mm-hmm. Because if the issue with Richardson was he's shooting, but teams aren't guarding him, I don't know if White answers that question.
Yeah.
But you probably do get a little bit more as far as driving and defense than you got from Richardson. So I give it a thumbs up for Boston.
I got you. I also like it for Boston. Like, my first thought was like, holy crap, we might get Derek White and Marcus Smart minutes together. And also, even if they don't play together, you stagger those two. I would be very upset if I was a primary on the other team. It's like, okay, cool. Marcus Smart is going to the bench. Here comes Derek White. My life is not getting any easier whatsoever. I would say I echo your concerns about the shooting, because Derek White has been a spotty one throughout his career, and he's having a not so great one this season. I will say, beyond that concern that he shares with Josh Richardson in terms of how defenses guard him, like what he adds as a passer to a group that has struggled with that at times this year, like that's perked up as of late, I do think he helps juice the ball movement for Boston. So that is a positive in addition to, like, he's a pretty good pick and roll creator, even despite the shooting concerns. So I think just giving him another guy that can take some pressure off of the Jays and can create some shots for them, I think that's a positive.
Does he fit more into what Boston would want to do as far as movement goes, as far as dribble handoffs go, as far as that playmaking aspect? Because I feel like that might be a thing, but I'm not sure.
I feel like he can. I think he's a good playmaker.
So another smart player. Mm-hmm. That's got to be a good move. Especially because if you think about it, if you're trusting Smart with the ball in his hands, you should like what White does with the ball in his hands, in theory. Especially with the passing, getting the paint, finish a little bit. So, yeah, I like it. I think there's more flexibility, even if the shooting isn't where you might want it to be.
Yep, I'm with you. And for the Spurs, like, I also think this is pretty solid for them. Like, I think it's clear, it's good. Derek White's the best player in this trade. Honestly, by a decent margin, in my opinion. But also, you have DeJounte. You just drafted Josh Primo. You have Devin Vassell. You still have Lonnie Walker. Like, they have invested pretty heavily in their guard room over the past two seasons. And so if Derek White isn't part of your long-term plans, adding to the wing room with Josh Richardson, you're taking a flyer on Langford. You're getting a first. And then a swap later. Like, that's a pretty good return for someone that wasn't a part of your long-term future. So I feel like that's a deal that works for both of them.
No, I like it. I just wish San Antonio could find all the time to play these young guys, but I like it. Also, can Josh Richardson find a home? This man exploded in Miami in four teams in three seasons now.
It's not great.
I just want him to just find a spot.
Same. Hey, I will say, like, I haven't heard anything. I haven't seen a report, but like, if the Spurs, I don't know. What if Josh Richardson becomes a buyout candidate?
Ooh, what if he goes to the Lakers?
Oh God, I would hate that. Oh no. Like, he would help them, but also, like, oh God, I don't like that for him.
You're trying to get him to Utah or something like that.
No. Miami has a roster spot. That's all I'm saying. If he wants to recapture his game, you know, get him right. But no, I mean, Utah could definitely use him. He's someone that can play some defense on the wing. Anyway, speaking of wing defenders, Torrey Craig is back in Phoenix. Took Jalen Smith in a second round pick to do it.
How do you feel about this? Because you're usually team young guy, and Jalen Smith is young guy. What are your thoughts on his run ending to get Torrey Craig back?
I kind of like it for Indy. I ain't gonna hold you. Like, Miles Turner's still out. Jalen Smith, like, you have to add at least a singular grain of salt, because big men that are pick and roll partners with Chris Paul tend to look 10% better at the very least. But, like, he shows some intriguing stuff as a ball screener guy for Chris Paul. I would like to see what him and Tyrese Halliburton look like together. There's going to be plenty of minutes to be soaked up between him and Isaiah Jackson while Miles Turner is still healing. So, like, there's a spot for him. It's a solid flyer for Indiana, just looking for young talent. And for Phoenix, you get another wing defender that you're comfortable with. Like, I don't know what his role looks like in the second round and beyond in the playoffs, because, again, teams just don't guard him. But, like, he does give them some regular season utility. I'm fine with it.
I was expecting a little bit more slander. But, I mean, if with Biombo and McGee producing at this type of level, I kind of understand with this window, you decide, hey, let's gear up for the playoffs, and you know how Torrey Craig can help you there. It helps your lineup versatility, gives you another defender to defend specific guys. So, I mean, we saw what Torrey Craig did to produce them. It's just going to be, can he hit the shots if needed? But I think it's a solid move to add to their room. Phoenix is really good, so.
We'll see. While we're on Phoenix, Aaron Holiday into a disabled player's exception for cash considerations. Is Aaron going to play?
See, that was my biggest question when it first came down, and then I was quickly reminded, hey, Cam Payne is injured.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. That makes a little bit more sense as far as why they did it, because Aaron Holiday intrigues me, because I was like, do they need him? Like, is he actually going to play? But if Payne is out, this is a decent opportunity for him. I just like his burst. Mm-hmm. I think there's some more there if he's in the right place, has the right opportunity to make plays, handle, attack, get in the paint. He's a willing defender at times, and being around Chris Paul would definitely help him out as far as growing his game. So I think it's a good flyer and intriguing talent. And I mean, if you tried to make it work with Elfrid Payton and you can get Aaron Holiday for that, why not?
I definitely get the flyer with Cam being out, like, just adding another guard. I want to be careful not to be down on this move because I was expecting another guard. But, like, also, man, if you're going to give up, if you're willing to trade for a guard, and if you're willing to give up draft compensation for a guard, make the swing for Eric Gordon. What are we doing? Get him and solidify your spot in the finals. That's all I wanted for Phoenix. But it's fine. They did still improve overall. Did you have any more Phoenix thoughts?
No.
Did you have the scouting report for cash considerations?
Second round pick.
There we go. All right. This is the one that threw me off. The Hornets have Montrezl Harrell now for Ish Smith and Vernon Carey Jr. And it's just like, on one hand, they needed another roller aside from Mason Plumlee. Montrezl Harrell becomes LaMelo Ball's best pick and roll partner. Cool. They needed that interior scoring. Montrez is a bully. Fun. But at what point is this team going to care about their defense?
Not after this stretch of not being able to score they just had.
Yeah, I guess this is conveniently timed, huh?
I think there was a little bit more value on trying to find someone else who can roll to the rim that is not Mason Plumlee. All due respect to Mace, I like Trez's fit for them on that end of the floor, mm-hmm. as far as having a roller, especially if they're going to stay leaning on pick and roll to this degree. You might want to have someone who could finish consistently, and he could on paper anchor the bench unit, so you don't have to go small as much. I mean, I guess technically you could say that it's going small, but he's a big. So I think that gives them a boost.
it just, it feels very I've won, but at what cost to me? So again, like the offensive benefit is very clear, but also like we also know what Montrez takes off the table on the other end. And it's not like he's insulated with a bunch of good defenders to kind of mitigate what he can't do on the defensive end.
This is true, but you know, Montrez plays off energy and the Hornets are an energy ball club.
Yeah.
You actually see him sparking a run with just vicious floaters and a couple dunks, and now the crowd's going crazy.
You know who really won? Eric Collins.
Oh, boy.
He gets the LaMelo fun stuff, the Oubre threes, and also the fun stuff. You get Montrezl Harrell dunks now, the Mason Plumlee reverse dunks that look effortless, Miles Bridges. Going to be tuning into some Charlotte games, I tell you that much.
I better tune in now at this rate.
I'm telling you. And the Wizards just can't quit Ish Smith, huh?
No, they cannot. Surprised that Schmidt didn't pop a little more in Charlotte, but hey, the personnel they have is the personnel they have.
He had a stretch during the beginning of the year.
Is Ish Smith going to start in Washington?
Oh, no. Is he?
I mean,
surely it's him, not, right?
It's him or Raul Neto.
No, I was about to say, it might be the guy. Oh, man, it might. Wizards can't quit him either, so. It is on brand. It is on brand. Okay, while we're on the Wizards, the most surprising deal of the day, in my opinion, Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis Bertans to the Mavericks for Kristaps Porzingis in a second. Surely I'm not the only one that feels just kind of meh on the whole thing.
I had a feeling you felt meh on it. Who do you feel more meh for?
The Mavericks, probably.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, because, like, at least for Washington, like, Kristaps is clearly the best player in the deal. And there are obvious health concerns. But, like, when he's on the court, like, he serves a very clear role as, like, a pick-and-pop big that teams have to account for. And you can envision, like, him and Bradley Beal building some pretty simple chemistry in ball screens and stuff. If I'm Dallas, like, you're basically breaking up the Kristaps contract into two smaller pieces, which I get. But, like, Bertans just isn't good, and that's a lot of money still. And for Dinwiddie, I wonder about what the fit with Luka is going to be. If they're going to play those two guys together at that rate. Because, like, with Beal and Dinwiddie, you at least say, okay, they're both rim pressure guys, but, like, Bradley Beal can shoot, and Beal's just having a down year. Like, Luka isn't a great shooter. And we're still waiting on Dinwiddie to find the downhill juice, too. So, like, I just don't know how I feel about that for Dallas. Like, I'm not opposed to them moving off of Kristaps if you're worried about, like, the health and stuff, and Luka's been pretty good without him. But for this package, I'm just like, are we sure about that?
Now, and this is the beautiful part of this podcast, because I'm going to attempt to get into the mind of Dallas.
Okay.
Maybe they like what they found with this starting lineup they have now. With KP out. You got Dwight at the five. You got Dorian at the four. You got Luka and Jalen Brunson. And I guess Bullock for now, but Tim Hardaway Jr. in theory. Mm-hmm. Maybe they like that. Maybe they like the flow of not having to fit KP into what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And force post-ups or get him involved. Maybe they just want to let Luka cook and let Jalen Brunson cook. Mm-hmm. And maybe the minutes off the bench that are, I think, currently going to Trey Burke, maybe they're like, hey, let's get those to Spencer Dinwiddie. Maybe we get some more creation, get another ball handler. If it doesn't work, we can always take him out. So he doesn't necessarily have the same burden that he had in Washington where, hey, we need you to kind of be kind of be that guy you were 2 years ago. So you can give us some flashes. If you don't have it, we still got Luka and Jalen, so it's fine. And maybe with Davis, they were just like, hey, we should just keep a shooting big around. Just in case. He can't keep shooting at this level. Right? Like, this man was like, what, a 38, 39, 40% guy? And now he's at 31.
Yeah. I mean, and like, to be fair to him, like, he was high 20s, low 30s for like the first half of last year, and then he just took off. So like, there's always the possibility of that coming back. But even then, like, he's so bad on defense. He's so bad.
That zone, though.
He's so bad. It's bad. It's really bad. So I will see.
So you're calling him no, that sounds too much like a cuss word. Won't go with that pun. Try to keep that clean rating. Sorry, there we go.
Thank you for keeping the podcast in mind. Oh God, that's terrible. That is terrible. But no, I'll just have to see. But like, my first thing, the first thing I thought as you were making that case, and it makes sense, Phil, was just like, if they want to let Luka cook and they want to let Jalen Brunson cook, like, Dinwiddie's also going to want to cook.
But I think he's going to be cooking with the cooking on the outside grill. Mm-hmm. Not going to be in the oven. He's got the burgers out there.
Oh, okay. The analogies are picking up on this pod, I must say.
Hey, we're trying. We're trying to evolve.
Trying to diversify. I feel you.
Porzingis in Washington. Like, I get, hey, if that's the cost and we get this talent, let's go for it. And we need to do something because Bradley Beal, .. But how do they make this work? Because it feels crowded to me. If you have Kuzma, and you have KP, and you have Denny, and you have Rui, and all those guys kind of excel at the same position, and you also have Gafford and Bryant, how do you get all of these people time and get them going?
That's a good question. That is a really good question. This front court room is... Yeah, you trade Montrez and Davis Bertans, and you pencil in like a 32-minute guy. You already have Gafford and Thomas Bryant. It's a lot.
Also, the Wizards, what a circle that is to have the year you had last year where there's a lot of Ish Smith and Raul Neto, and then have the run you had to start, and it ends back with Ish Smith and Raul Neto. It just feels like a time loop there. What happened to their guard room?
Well, I don't have a nice answer to that question, so I'll just leave that alone. Not sure. It's a bit unfortunate what's happened in Washington. I'm intrigued by the KP flyer, though. They're going to have some... Man, if they decide they're not going to re-sign Beal, though, or Beal's like, I'm out of here, that's going to get interesting, because that's a big chip just kind of chilling there.
I mean, at least they got something, you know? I guess that's the theory. Like, if he leaves, we got a Kristaps.
Yeah.
If they were shooting for Sabonis, they were, well...
Close enough. We got Sabonis at home. Yeah. We got this Sabonis off Wish. Oh, man. All right. Let's close it out with Dennis Schroeder is a Rocket. Allegedly, reportedly, Daniel Tice is back in Boston.
Tice in Boston feels right, but this Schroeder thing has to be a buyout.
Right? Yeah, that was my first thought. But like, they're also, I want to say it was Jonathan Fagan that reported that I think it was DJ Augustine and Armani Brooks are being waived in order to make room for this trade. And like, they're also, like, Enes Freedom isn't going to be there. I don't know what's going on with Bruno Fernando, but I would imagine he's also going to get waived.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough. Redacted. But yeah, I can't imagine. Though, like, we just talked about Christian Wood on the pod the other day. Dennis Schroeder on a tanking team just sounds hilarious. Dennis Schroeder on a tanking team in a contract year. You're just asking for Rocket fans to be upset and turn off their televisions.
Dennis Schroeder on a tanking team in a contract year with young guards.
And young bigs.
Doesn't sound like the best idea.
Like, Boston was trying to win and the fan base was fed up with Dennis Schroeder dribbling the ball, pounding the ball into the dirt. What do you think Dennis is going to do when he looks to his left and he sees Jalen Green? It's like, brother, you are in year one of your rookie deal and you're making more than I am right now. You good.
So if they were fed up with Eric Gordon dribble penetration, what are they going to do when Dennis Schroeder gets to working?
Yeah, and John Wall ain't played.
Oh, how mad is
yes.
How mad is John Wall if he turns the TV on and sees Dennis out there running pick and roll?
That man was like, I am so much I'm better than him. What are we doing? Oh, goodness. Okay, let's say Dennis Schroeder does get bought out, because Lord knows he probably needs to be bought out. Like, that is not the guard you put on a rebuilding team. I'm sorry. You just don't do that. What's a landing spot for Dennis Schroeder?
I mean, there's one obvious one that I don't really want to say out loud.
Are we talking about the team in California? Or?
The Clippers.
Boo. No more point guard. No. I guess they do technically need a backup point guard. Dennis Schroeder becoming the Eric Bledsoe replacement just feels on brand.
Would you like him in Milwaukee?
No, I wouldn't like that particularly. I'll be honest with you. I was about to say, what about Phoenix? Like, we just saw Chris Paul and Schroeder in OKC.
That would be interesting.
Like, that could be a spot if he's bought out. I'm trying to think who else could use a backup point guard among, like, playoff teams. Like Phoenix off the top of my head. He was linked to Chicago for a little bit.
I don't
love that. We like what Ayo Dosunmu was doing, and Kobe White's had some stretches this year. He was also leading to Cleveland. If Kevin Pangos isn't doing it for you, do you want Schroeder and Caris LeVert playing together? I'm not sure about that, but.
Oh, Caris LeVert. Yeah, you better watch out. I got something for your LeVert take.
Oh, here we go.
Too late in the pod for it, but don't you worry about it.
No, okay. No, I'm sure you'll make the shot when it's necessary. You hit them when they count. I got you. Toronto still needs a backup point guard.
I really enjoyed that they got redacted out of there, though.
Yeah.
Quickly announced.
Like, he's got to be done, right? Surely.
You got to be careful with who you upset in basketball. I'll put it that way.
Fair enough.
You got to be really careful, because if you climb up the wrong tree and you fall,
you're done.
That tree might not be there when you come back.
Like, surely that has to be the end of the road.
The end of this road. We can always take a right.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Thunker Spot. If you have not subscribed, please do so already. You know what? Actually, I am glad that we... You are a menace. That is a... that's a shot. That's a shot to have. Good Lord. I can't say I was expecting that one. This is why you're the star of the podcast. I ain't even gonna hold you. That's some good stuff. Anyway, I did say if you left a review for us. I did say if you left a review for us, I'll read it on the podcast. We do have one. And the comment reads, "Some days I wish Nikias more resembled Barkley so that Steve could facetiously compare Nikias' opinions to Chuck's instead of Perks." I don't know how to feel about that.
The hashtag is big agenda, folks.
That is incredible.
I feel pretty good about it.
I bet you do. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Shout out Derica of the Wind, I believe is how I pronounce that, but did leave a 5-star review. So thank you. Again, if you have reviews for us, leave them. We're on the pod. Try not to slander me too much, but 5 stars, leave a nice comment. Subscribe to us if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your pods, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Caitlin Clark is really good.
So is Aaliyah Boston.